session number 26370, round 5.
I don't remember much about it.
Odette Brown, round 5. To go back a little bit, can I ask you what you remember about the Blitz in your time living in Western London?
Yes, well, I suppose the main thing I remember was the very first raid that I was in. You could call it the baptism of fire, really, because it came down with a vengeance. I remember that Hitler had said that he was going to bomb London on the 15th of August. And unfortunately, my young sister's 12th birthday, this was 1940, and her 12th birthday was on the 16th of August. And we were then living in New Malden, in a house with a garden. And my mother said, rather wisely, I am afraid, why don't we bring Ronnie's birthday party forward? Because if this wretched man really does bomb London on the 15th, it might be better to get the party in before. But so, of course, both my sister and I said, certainly not, we're not going to be dictated to by Hitler. We'll keep the 16th of August as the day for the party, because that's what it's supposed to be. Well, as a matter of fact, on the 15th in the morning, we had an air raid warning. But nothing happened. So we thought, that's what the sirens sound like. And then we had the all clear. And in the afternoon, the same thing happened. But in the afternoon, we went across the road to a friend's house. They had a flat roof. And we were standing there with binoculars watching the planes, which were over Croydon. And I think they bombed Croydon, or they got to Croydon and dropped some bombs on them, or something happened over Croydon, which wasn't that far away, but we could see it through the binoculars. We thought it was all very interesting. And the siren came and went, and nothing happened. Then the dawn, the 16th, my sister was working in London, so she was at an office in London, and I was home with my mother and my young sister, and we had all the preparations that we made for the tea party, to which her school friends were coming. And in the morning, there was an air raid warning, and then they all clear. So again, we were sort of, these rubbishy air raid warnings, they don't mean anything. And then it happened again in the afternoon of the 16th, at the same time as the day before, when nothing much had happened. But this time, as the children, small children were here, some were neighbors' children, so they just ran home. And there was one girl, Thelma, who stayed because her mother lived, her parents lived further away. And she stayed, and we'd had the shelter finished, completed in the garden on the 14th of August. And although we had a wooden floor on the floor, I had put in the odd mattress or chair or something, including one chair which had a bit of a broken leg. I just put it in as, well, that'll do to start with. We're not going to need it anyway. But unfortunately, as we all went into the shelter, and my mother came up the garden path with a plate of cake, saying, well, this will keep us going, because it was about tea time, it was about 4 o'clock. And as she came in, we could hear planes above us. We thought, well, those are our boys up there. Unfortunately, it turned out that they were not our boys, but they possibly were, because they were trying to intercept the German bombers. And as the German bombers, I don't know where they were making for, whether it was London they were trying to get to, or the Hawker factory in Kingston where planes were made or whatever, but wherever they were going, they were intercepted by our fighters, and consequently, they dropped all their bombs on New Malden and went back. And it was as my mother got into the shelter with this plate of cakes, which nobody touched, needless to say, and I had the dog with me. We had a lovely Welsh Springer Spaniel, and I was holding the dog, and it was getting rather noisy because of the planes, apart from anything else, and the dog was getting a bit sort of worried about this. Suddenly, we just couldn't understand what was happening, because it was a succession of high explosives just coming down and bursting and coming down and bursting, but it was a continuous noise. And the shelter, which was half underground and half over, and it was a strongly built concrete one, it wasn't an Anderson shelter, it appeared to be rolling. I mean, it was as though it was jumping up and down and moving. It was like a circular movement. You felt as though I made me think of the chap who was in a barrel and rolled down the hill. And you really felt you were in a barrel being rolled down, because it was a most strange movement. You weren't aware of just the ground shaking. You were aware of the whole lot rotating. And we were so not scared. I think we were so astounded by what was happening, this continuous noise. The dog was yelping and trying to get out, and I kept holding on to him. I was sitting on the broken chair, and the broken leg kept disappearing under me. I was trying to keep my balance, trying to hold on to the dog. The two little girls, Selma and my young sister, had been taught what to do, and they were sitting on the mattress at the end of the shelter with their hands in their ears and their heads down, which was the correct position. My nanny, who was my old governess, who was with us, she was a Christian scientist, so she was praying, but she was also saying, "Oh, bless the boys," and I was saying, "They're the Germans." No, she said, "They're our boys. They must be our boys." And my mother sort of was muttering prayers, I suppose. I don't know what she was doing. But we were all utterly, I mean, the reaction was utter and complete amazement. No more than that. I can't remember being frightened. There wasn't time. Eventually, this noise, which seemed to go on forever, I don't suppose it was, but it seemed to go on forever, and then it stopped. It stopped, and of course, when it stopped, it was dead silence, absolutely dead silence. And we thought, well, we're the only people left alive. We must be. I mean, with all this going on, everybody else must be dead, and all the houses must be flattened, and that's it. So the dog was trying to get out, and the forced mother said, "Don't let him out! Don't let him out! You know, there might be a crater, there might be this, there might be that." Well, of course, this dog wanted to get out, and in the end, I said, "I can't hold him anymore," so we let him go out. He came back wagging his tail. So that sounded all right. I said, "I'll go." "No, don't you go and see. Wait till they're all clear." In the end, I persuaded my mother that I could just put my head out just to have a peep. I put my head out and had a peep. The fences were there. The other houses were there. Our house was there. I didn't see any broken windows. I was absolutely more surprised than ever. So then eventually the all clear went. So we all emerged, feeling somewhat shaken. And everybody was out in the street. All the people came out of their houses and gardens and things, and everybody was saying, "What on earth happened?" Well, actually, there was the house at the end of the road, which was near the Kingston bypass, which had gone flattened completely, and most of the bombs had actually fallen on the shopping district of New Walden, I think, and the station. And our area wasn't that badly hit. It was, if you went far enough away, it was, of course. Had they been much larger bombs as the type that were developed later now, we would have been obliterated. But the high explosives were big enough, but they weren't that big, I suppose, in those days. So that was the first thing we knew about bombs. I mean, we'd never even heard a bomb in the distance, because nowadays, at least, people who haven't experienced it will have seen films with bombs and that sort of thing, but we'd never seen a thing at all. And we were somewhat, everybody lost their appetite. Nobody wanted to partake of the various cakes and this and that and the other, which were spread out on this big dining room table. Gradually, the children came back with their parents, and sort of we all stood around talking and so forth. But it was, nobody wanted anything to eat. We were all completely. Nowadays, they would call it traumatized, I suppose. Well, we didn't know the word traumatized, so we were all right. But it was, in retrospect, I suppose, we began to realize that we could have been flattened like that house we could see in the distance, which had this, the whole house had disappeared. And people were killed, of course, and then there were various ambulances and things around. And it was quite an amazing thing. Then after that, of course, we had the Blitz regularly, night after night after night after night. But then but it was that first time, which was the only time. After that, nothing seemed anything at all, because it seemed, as I say, it was really what the French call a baptême du feu, a baptism of fire. It was really, and my poor sister, of course, who was in London. In London, they'd heard a warning, but nothing else. They didn't know anything had happened over New Malden. After all, New Malden wasn't really a target, other than, the Kingston factory. But that was further on. She came back in her usual way, and she had to get off at one station and get a bus. And the bus got as far as the New Malden roundabout and wouldn't proceed any further. And they said, she said, why? And they said, oh, well, bypass is covered in craters and the pole, the district is flat, no houses left, everybody's been killed. So she had a much bigger fright than we did, because she thought, my goodness, my family are there. And she said, I ran all that way, and it was something like a mile, I think, in her high-heeled shoes, with her heart in her mouth. She ran all the way to the end of our road, and she turned in, and she saw that this house looked as though it was all right, and that one did. And when she got to our house, she realized that all was well, and she came in, and she said, oh, you're all right, are you? Practically accusingly. I mean, she'd been so worried that she was practically angry that nothing had happened to us. And then she said, well, I'm starving. When are we going to eat? So we said, eat? There's a table. Help yourself. Nobody had even thought of dinner at that stage. And we sat around in a sort of state of, what was that? What was that thing that happened? So she became fairly sympathetic after a while. But I think she deserved more sympathy than we did, because she really had a much worse fright than we did. So that was my main memory of the Blitz. But after that, of course, it was dreadful. And when the city burnt and all that, you know, you could stand there and you could see this light in the sky, and it was really shocking. And of course, while we were still in New Malden, my sister and I were there, and my mother had gone to Wales. We were very brave fire watchers. And we used to fire watch at certain times, and we had an armband, a tin helmet. An armband with ARP written on it, I think, or fire watcher or something. We had a stirrup pump and a bucket with sand in it, or water, sorry, and there was sand somewhere, because you were supposed to be able to put out fires. We'd learned all about that. We went to classes to learn how to use a stirrup pump. Thank goodness we never had to. But when we were fire watching, we were either fire watching from 10 till midnight, or midnight till 2, 2 to 4, or 4 to 6. Well, when you had to get up in the morning, get up to your office in London, it wasn't very nice when you had to fire watch between 2 and 4. That was about the worst slot. We didn't get many of the 10 to 12 slots, because where there were married ladies whose husbands were away, they didn't want to do anything after midnight. So they didn't mind having the 10 to 12 slot, but they didn't want after that. But my sister and I were regarded as men, I suppose, so we went in any of them. And if you had to get up at 2 and go to fire watch till 4 and then go to bed after that, there wasn't much time, but you know, we got used to not sleeping. And we used to patrol up and down our road with these armbands on and whistles. We had whistles, that's right. And if something happened, you were supposed to be able to give the alarm by whistling. Well, I remember that on the 16th of April 1943, I think it was, it was 43, or 42 maybe, I'm not sure. There had been a lull for a while, and then there was a most enormous raid, and, you know, it was, the whole sky was alight, and my sister and I were patrolling up and down. I thought, what are we wasting our time for? I mean, everybody's awake. Nobody could have slept with the noise that was going on. It wasn't just above us, it was near into London, and it was dreadful what happened in London then. And it was the one on the 16th of May and one on the 16th of April and one on the 10th of May. But I can't remember if it was 1941 or 42. It was one of those years anyway. And it was really, really very terrible destruction. But we were fire watching, and in order to give the alarm if something happened, well, nobody could have slept through it. So it was, but, you know, we just walked up and down. And one night I remember that we were near the Kingston bypass, and one end of the road was near there, and we were near there, and we heard some voices, and we thought, that's very strange. It wasn't that night, it was another night when it was quite dark, and we thought, what on earth is going on? And then we could see the outline of something, and we realized they had mobile guns, mobile anti-aircraft guns. I know they had them on the railways, but these were on the Kingston bypass, and so we beat a hasty retreat, because we thought, if that thing goes off, we'll be deafened. So we went back to what I call the safer side of the end of the road, which was, we weren't worrying about Germans, we were worrying about the anti-aircraft thing going off and blowing out our eardrums. But the Blitz was, so much has been written about the Blitz, and I had various other little adventures, but fortunately we were never actually harmed in it. And then later it was, when we were in London, there were these incendiary raids. There were high explosive raids in London too. And then it was the V1s. And then after that, the V2s. And they were really nasty. And I can remember leaving Bryanston Square on two successive evenings, by which time it must have been, October, November 1944. And as I crossed the road, I was walking towards Edgware Road, and as I got to just crossing one of the smaller roads, there was a terrific flash, and I thought, what was that? And then an incredible noise, obviously very, very far away, but it was a V2. It was a V2. I don't know where it fell. It didn't fall anywhere near me. And the next evening, I was leaving at about the same time, and as I got to that pavement, I thought, oh, this is where I was last night, and the same thing happened again. And it some unlucky people got it, obviously. It was some part of London, but I don't know where. And then after that, of course, I was on leave. I went to Wales, and then I went off to Virginia Water and so forth, so, or wherever. So I wasn't in London for the remainder of the V2s, and I didn't mind missing them at all, because that was completely uncanny, because you had no idea it was coming. With the V1s, you knew that if it stopped, it was going to come down. Although after a while it didn't always come down, it just glided and then came down. But you more or less took them in your stride, but anyway, you were too busy to notice them. But the V2s were really right out of the blue.
Was there no sound that accompanied them?
Well, the sound was first the flash and then the sound, but it was rumble, sort of like terrible thunder, but it was miles away.
There was no humming?
No, I know. I mean, I never saw it. If I'd seen one, I wouldn't be here to talk. I mean, if I managed to see one of those, I saw V1s going over. You could look up and you saw this thing making a sound, a sort of horrible sound going along. But, the first time I realized that some of them glided and didn't just come down immediately was when I was walking back between Bryanston and Square and Naudsby House, and there was nowhere to take shelter, and this thing stopped, and somebody was with me, and we both just stood there and looked up, because we knew there was nothing we could do, but it didn't come down, it glided and went on somewhere else. So that's when we thought, they don't necessarily fall the minute they stop. That's at the end was rather uncanny, because you may not have heard it coming although it didn't glide all that way away, at least I don't think so. I don't know, I can't... We were never particularly alarmed or scared or thinking, oh dear, what's going to happen, because everybody else was in the same boat. We just got on with it, and that was all. And we were too busy anyway. But I do remember those incendiary bombs when we were in the flat in Paddington, and then that one hit the front door. I thought that was a time when I thought, this might be nasty, because I hate the thought of being burnt, obviously. We would have been burnt alive, because we couldn't have, if it's a place that caught fire. But I suppose they were not big enough to burn a whole building. I don't know. Well, I never found out, I'm glad to say. But of course, I mean, some people have the most unfortunate, unlucky things in the Blitz, because you could be, you heard of people who were just standing on a doorstep and something had happened some way away, but the blast of the thing knocked them over, and they were killed by that alone. I mean, if you're going to be unlucky, they used to say, if it's got your name on it, you can't do anything about it. And I suppose we had that kind of when you're young, you're more optimistic anyway. You don't think of these things. But that first one, that first time on the 16th of August 1940, is something. It was the bewilderment of it more than anything else, because the bombs were coming in such quick succession that you couldn't. There was the sound of it coming down, the sort of wee sound when it comes down, and the explosion, and of course another one was immediately after it. So the sounds were continuous, completely continuous, and it was the movement which was so extraordinary. This rolling motion. You really felt you were in a barrel or in a tube of some sort which was going round and round and round. It was just extraordinary sensation. And we just sat there in bewilderment, and I was clinging onto the dog, so one way or another, it was quite a thing, but it's an awful long time ago, and that's 1940, good heavens, and now it's 2003. Well, I must have survived, otherwise I wouldn't be here spouting all this nonsense.